Stein Online's live Clubland Q&A is just 1 minute away.
This is Mark Stein, back after four sellout voyages for the fifth annual Mark Stein Cruise. If you like the sound of April in Portugal and Spain on the fabulous new ship, the Celebrity Apex, well, you'll be at the apex of celebrity for our traditional week of sun, sea, and civilizational collapse. I'll have special guests from both sides of the Atlantic, including a reunion of all your favourite telly presenters from the glory days of GB News, who've since been sacked. And we'll do all the things you like about the Mark Stein Show and Stein Online, but close up and on water. More details at steinonline.com or marksteincruise.com.
The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now. Here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. January 29th, 2025. It is 3 p.m. North American Eastern Time, where RFK Jr. has just wrapped up his first day facing the United States Senate. 4 p.m. in the beautiful Canadian Maritimes, 4:30 p.m. in fabulous Newfoundland, and beyond the Americas, 8 p.m. in London, 9 p.m. in Paris, 10 p.m. in... No, I won't even attempt it. 10 p.m. in Kiev, 11 p.m. in Gaza, where the locals will have to make do without $50 million worth of U.S. taxpayer-funded condoms that Trump has cancelled. From the river to the sea, Palestine is condom-free. You'll have to use your kefir. 11:30 p.m. in Tehran, for all you Newfoundlanders who moved to Iran out of solidarity with the half-hour time zone. 1:45 in Kathmandu, for all you Iranians who moved to Nepal to check out the quarter-hour time zone. 4 a.m. in Singapore and Hong Kong, sorry about that. 7 a.m. in Sydney and Melbourne, which is not a terribly convivial hour for the kippers and kedgeree. 9 a.m. in Auckland, far more agreeable, and even later in His Majesty's dominions across the Pacific. We have a little bit of breaking news at this hour. There were news announcements that Trump had rescinded. That the Trump administration had rescinded its tweet because of this judge's injunction in the federal court in Washington, D.C. This judge, before she was appointed to the federal court, was on the D.C. Court of Appeals, which I have spent many happy years frolicking and gambling in front of. So I take it, just because she's from that court, that she's a complete nitwit. Press Secretary has just clarified that, in fact, it's only the OMB memo that has been withdrawn because it was not terribly well written, to be honest, but that Trump's executive order remains in effect and is being fully implemented. I mentioned earlier today, Trump has played a... This is so much better than the... launch of the 45th president's administration, because he's just the media can't. If you, it's basically the Clinton model applied to government. If you had one scandal, I said this back in the 90s. I forget where, but. Who knows, it might be out there. But I said, you know, if you have one scandal, people can focus on that. If you were like Clinton and you had 1,000, people just can't. They get bounced from one to the other. Oh, I thought we were talking about the profit, the cattle futures that Hillary. No, we're talking about Monica. Is it Monica or is it Paula? And that's what Trump has done with these executive orders. He's repeated. Appealed LBJ's executive order from 60 years ago. And I've hardly seen a word about it, because he did that in the middle of 400 other executive orders. So this has been brilliant. I will say, by the way, I don't, you know, I take it there's read that, I mean, this idea of rinky-dink, you know, district court judges striking down active policy in the White House, I'm sick of it anyway. But I don't actually, this judge might be beyond, whatever they say, beyond her skis or over her skis or whatever, because I'm not sure that even an injunction can compel the United States Treasury to keep cutting checks for various activities. That's why using the spending pause is a brilliant notion of Trump's. I'd also say that's domestically speaking, but I'd also say internationally speaking, using tariffs, and this is where Conservative Inc. just, you know, people say, tariffs, you know, that's not the, it's a conservative to be in favor of free trade and this, that, and that. He's not really using it as a, you know, Reaganite philosophical trade position. Trump has weaponized tariffs. So if some Latin American bozo says, okay, we're not taking our citizens back, he just tweets, fine, tariffs start at midnight on Monday. Get back to us. And which I think is rather a fair. I mean, basically, when he announced it with Canada, Canada didn't know whether he, because I think that was the first one, Canada didn't know whether he was being serious or not. And so now they're figuring, wait a minute, he means it. What if he does mean it? So they're threatening to Hydro-Quebec or whatever. They're going to lean on Hydro-Quebec not to supply electricity to New England or whatever. But this is actually a much, using tariffs as an instrument of foreign policy. I mean, he basically, that Colombian or whatever, that Latin American dictator or whatever he is, he's going to think twice. I mean, most politicians are showboaters. They don't actually, and Trump had an element of that in his first term. But a lot of this stuff is actually brilliantly thought out. Okay, let us get, because it's not meant to be me talking. I'm not feeling great. So if I have to check out, I'll have to do it rather suddenly. But we'll try and get through. Peter, let's get to your questions, because I like to know what's on your mind. And this is the place for it. I noticed a few commenters complain, oh, this is my third email, and they're just getting disappeared. Yeah, because in comments on columns, it's important to stay on topic and address the substance of the column. But this is where I find out what is on your mind. So Peter's up first, and he says, as you noted, the Trump tidal wave is sweeping up Rubio and Mace. or sweeping away, Mitch McConnell, the rhinos. Across the pond, Giorgia Meloni, the Italian Prime Minister, has thankfully and wisely chosen the Trump agenda. Salvini now has is planning on introducing, moving some bill to get the Italians out of the WHO. So it might wind up, I think Starmer's decided to double down on it in Britain. But basically, if you could get a domino effect rolling on that, so that the World Health Organization, which is largely Chinese dominated, but it would just be China and its client states, which certainly includes the UK. Anyway, Peter says Giorgia Meloni's chosen the Trump agenda. Do you think Squishy Farage will be swept up or swept away? I don't normally bring up Nigel Farage if I can help it, because he made a fair, yeah, I mean, he and his allies in GB News Management actually made quite a spirited effort to stress me out sufficiently so that I would have died in the intensive care unit in southern France. And it's a prudent man is wary of people trying to kill him. But Nigel, as we've noted, Nigel has said that Trump was wrong to pardon the J6ers. These J6ers, most of them, were serving longer terms than the gang rapists of English girls. And they were political prisoners. You know, you have the right to a speedy trial unless we decide we're just going to toss you in solitary and schedule a scheduling conference for your constitutionally guaranteed speedy trial in 3 years' time. I mean, disgusting, disgraceful. But Farage magisterially pronounces that Trump was wrong to release these political prisoners, because, as you know, with Britain's political prisoner, Tommy Robinson, Nigel is happy for him to rot in jail. Nigel is, there's no populism in Britain. If you contrast not just Nigel and Trump, but Nigel and the leaders of populist parties in Europe, the UK is nowhere near where it needs to be, and a lot of that is on Nigel. Why does he keep talking? He keeps volunteering his. There's a very good video with Dan Wootten and Calvin Robinson talking about this, and both of them will be on the Mark Steyn cruise. And Calvin makes the very good point that if you just riffle through these random attacks of his on Tommy Robinson, half the time he's not even been... So he goes on some show, there's no question about Tommy Robinson, but he feels he needs to bring it up anyway. Very odd, very odd. We've got more Tommy Robin, more Nigel Farage questions. George Pereira says, Mark, Brian Lanza said Nigel Farage is a much smaller person today in Donald Trump's eyes than he was 2 weeks ago as a result of Elon's tweet and engagement on this issue. Newsflash, it's not just in the eyes of President Donald J. Trump. It's in the eyes of everyone except Nigel. I've come to believe Nigel is just a waste of time and energy. And am I missing something? Tommy Robinson, however, how he is being persecuted and threatened and not backing down or becoming silent seems to me to be becoming the bigger man. I don't know whether he is a smaller person in Donald Trump's eyes, because he was never that large a person in Donald Trump's eyes. At CPAC, when he's in the UK, he presents himself as... He couldn't get into the inauguration. He couldn't get in to see Elon Musk. He says, Elon and I have patched... Elon won't meet with him. Elon Nigel is said to be furious that Elon is now paying Tommy Robinson's legal bills. You can see, I just mentioned casually, I could have mentioned a zillion other things, but Trump has just repealed a 60-year-old Lyndon Johnson executive order on affirmative action. Trump doesn't back down on these things. Trump isn't calibrating what is... I think it was Israel Pickholz, was demanding to know why I had said, if I'd been British Foreign Secretary in 1917, I'm not sure I'd have supported the Balfour Declaration. Well, I wasn't British Foreign Secretary in 1917, which is the point. But I'm not talking about the justice of the question. I'm talking about the politics of it, which is how politicians, useless politicians, that's why our entire civilization is sliding off the cliff, because people are calibrating the politics. So had Nigel Farage been Foreign Secretary in 1917, you can guarantee he wouldn't have said anything to whatever it was, the Zionist Organization of Great Britain and Ireland. He wouldn't have said, His Majesty's government views with favour the establishment of a Jewish home. No, he wouldn't have done that at all. His whole thing is Cal, and the thing is, he's behind the, you know, he's in this thing. I'm building this great political party. I've got to move toward the centre. The politicians who make a difference move the centre toward them. That's what Trump has done with immigration, right? With immigration, both parties were selling out the American people. Oh, we're all in favour of comprehensive immigration reform. The change in Marco Rubio from 8 years ago. You know, George W. Bush, immigrant, the whole stupid, we need immigrants to do the jobs Americans won't do. Well, Americans won't do those jobs because you don't want to pay them a market wage. So it's a racket. And it wasn't any open borders Democrat who planted that phrase in the language. It was George W. Bush. They just come here to put food on their families, as he put it. Food on their families. Marvellous line from Mr. Bush, but at least it enables you to remember who said it. That was the Republican position. Now it's become one of those 80-20 issues. So now we're just arguing about whether it's all the rapists and just the rapists and murderers and criminal gangs who should be deported, or whether everybody in the country illegally should be deported, as you saw with Stephen Miller's thing and all the bollocks. Everyone just laughs at it now, as Stephen pointed out with that idiot from CNN. You know, we need them to come in. It's a job. Agricultural labour is a job that Americans won't do. And as he pointed out, it's only 1% of these illegal immigrants doing those jobs. The 99% go to the city, and this idea that they're out there picking fruit all day long is completely ridiculous. Now, when has accepting Brexit, which is a major exception, as I've said, Nigel effected the biggest change in British foreign policy in half a century without having a seat in the House of Commons. In that sense, in 2016, he was a more influential figure for the last 50 years than whoever was Chancellor of the Exchequer or Foreign Secretary or Lord Privy Seal or Prime Minister. Hold that date, 2016, the British people voted to leave the European Union, and then Nigel sat back. I remember this actually from GB News. Nigel and I had a conversation during the commercial break towards the end of his show and the start of mine. And he objected because I was talking to, I was going to have, I think it was Kate Hoey who was coming on to talk about how Brexit had been bungled and the Northern Ireland Protocol was a disgrace. And Nigel didn't want any of that being talked about because Brexit is his big achievement. So he'd rather pretend nothing has changed. All the stupid European Union regulations are still, all that's changed is that if someone with a UK passport takes a flight to Nice to go and lie on a topless beach in Saint-Tropez, they can't use the express check-in. They actually, it's quite funny at Nice. They kicked British Airways out of the fast track security line just because they can, just because they're happy to screw Britain over while Britain is not happy, not willing, and Nigel hasn't been willing to actually demand that Brexit be implemented. So the longer that goes on, you have to think, well, wait a minute, why can't he be like Trump? Why can't he? He said, oh, no, it's quite impossible, the idea of mass deportations. You know, as Trump just starts filling the planes and seeing people go, he keeps explaining. And he said now about Tommy Robinson, for example, that he hates anyone of the Muslim faith. That actually isn't true. The only Muslim Nigel knows is his party's big Islamic money bags, whereas Tommy Robinson grew up with Muslims. So I don't really like, as I said, I'm wary of him because he and Angelus Softcoculus and the other guy were actually coming, they came pretty close to killing me. And I'm wary of people who try to kill him. I think a prudent person is wary of people who are trying to kill him. Nigel also, he at one point in the early days of that heart attack, he wanted a medical statement. He contacted Mark Stein Enterprises and because I was still in the ICU and wanted a medical statement that he could read out on the show, and somehow this came through to me. And I said, oh, no, I don't want to have a medical, because then people will be getting excited because maybe I'll die tomorrow. So he said, no, Mark doesn't want people talking, you know, as I used to say a lot. My idea of a good medical bulletin was the one for George V, the king's life is drawing peacefully to a close. That's the only one I'm going to do. And so he said, no, we're not going to do a medical bulletin. And so he read one out anyway. I've never known anyone. That's what they should be going to Ofcom. To go. So I'm getting a bit off track here, but Nigel exaggerates his closeness to Elon Musk and to President Trump. He's not close to either, as we saw during his few days in Washington, but that's his big thing. When he's, you know, that he's a sort of, he's an influence on the president. He has the president's ear. And both Trump and Musk took a look at what Nigel's actually doing, all this gatekeeping. You know, you look at Elon Musk and his intervention in the next month's German election and try to imagine, you know, what is Nigel moving the meter on? So I don't doubt, you know, this thing where there's one poll that shows, basically it shows Tories, Labour and Reform all tied with 20-something percent. And, you know, those polls are a spasm. And by the time the election comes in 2029, who knows? I mean, the poll for an election that doesn't need to be held until 2029 isn't really much use. But let's say it held and he managed to scrape through and form a government. Do you think he'd be doing Nigel bloody Farage, the gatekeeper, the over-gatekeeper? the man who has no friends, you know, every time he's formed however many parties, and when he leaves, and then he steps down as leader and immediately disowns. He hasn't built, disowns the guy who succeeded him. He's not going to do it. He's had 30 years. He's had 30 years. His great achievement was Brexit, and then he sat back as a duplicitous prat like Boris Johnson, completely bollocksed Brexit. And he allowed the Northern Ireland Protocol to happen, and then that stupid Windsor framework basically puts England, Scotland and Wales into the Northern Ireland Protocol. So the whole, his great, he's, it's, no, I'm Nigel's not, I will say this too, Nigel's not an honourable man. And certain things, like, you know, so for example, Musk has talked about the girls who are getting gang raped and has changed the conversation on that. And if you ask Nigel about it, you know, somehow it always comes back to Nigel. Somehow it always comes, you know, I don't even know why he's talking about what the hell are you talking about Tommy Robinson for? Okay, you don't like him. That's a very long list. You know, you don't like Loza Fox either. You don't like Calvin Robinson. You say they're not team players. You're great as long as you're the only guy on the team. Then you're a great team player. This is Farage's problem. You know, we have had, what do they call it these days? The Overton window. Well, Trump has moved on a lot of the, on trans issues. His that brilliant ad, Trump's for you, Kamala's for they, them. That was a brilliant political ad, right? He moved the meter on that. The thing we ran with Nancy Mace. Nancy Mace was all hot for trannies just a couple of years ago. She was co-sponsoring with Democrats all the tranny legislation for the 157 genders or whatever. Now she's saying, oh, I'm being attacked because I think there are only two genders. Well, they only think there are two genders since Trump actually signed the executive order on it. You need, particularly in Britain, you know, he's ruled out mass deportations. This is when you've got up to 1,000 Albanian sex traffickers landing on your beaches every night, right? And, oh, no, no, we can't have mass deportations. Oh, no, and we can't be, let's not be beastly to the Muslims. This is a populist in the Europe of 2025? No, it's not, you know, it might be all this political calibration. Trump doesn't think like that. Those J6ers should not have been in jail for years on end. Tommy Robinson should not be in solitary confinement for 18 months. So those J6ers are out now because Trump didn't bother. Oh, I'm doing the finger in the windy calibration stuff. No, he just figured they got screwed over and he decided to de-screw them over. And Nigel actually needs to do that on some issue. Brexit's gone. It's completely bollocks now. I wrote a book on it, Prisoner of Windsor, as you may have just heard in Lola's little promotional announcement for it, just before the top of the hour, in a land where Brexit never quite happened. Well, Brexit, I wrote that before I understood that Farage had let Theresa May and Boris Johnson bollocks Brexit. You know, it's not funny what's happened. That Northern Ireland Protocol and the Windsor Framework are the biggest losses. The whole premise of Prisoner of Windsor is basically that Britain is reduced to the status of an Indian princely state under the Raj, which is what the King and Rishi Sunak and Boris Johnson and Theresa May and Nigel Farage allowed to happen. That guy Barnier, Michel Barnier, who resigned. I'm sorry, I'm getting a bit worked up here. We'll move on in a minute. Michel Barnier, who resigned as French Prime Minister a couple of weeks ago, but Monsieur Barnier was the EU's chief negotiator with Britain over Brexit. And Nigel sat back as Monsieur Barnier total Brexit. The BBC came to do a big interview. He's not an unfunny man, Monsieur Barnier. And so as the years dragged on, the BBC come to interview him with a big camera crew about why Brexit's failed and all the rest of it. And they set up in his office and he goes off to lunch and he comes back a couple of hours later and the BBC crew are still taking down all their lights and equipment and everything. And he says to his secretary, "Ah, I see the British have not yet left." And that's not an unfunny line. He was openly mocking. Well, you know, I won't forget that, the way he basically said to me he didn't want us interviewing any guests expressing doubt about whether Brexit had happened. Well, that's Nigel Farage for you. That's Nigel Farage. He may be the most popular politician in the country, but he ain't going to do anything for you. Because for 30 years, he's all about Nigel, as Calvin Robinson said today. Chris Davis says, "Mark, I hope you..." That's all. You shouldn't really stick them at the front, those Chris. Chris Davis, I love all that. All the people... Half the people saying, if you'd been Foreign Secretary, why wouldn't you have supported the Balfour Declaration? I'm just talking about the politics of it. Because at that point, the British priority was to destroy the Ottoman Empire and divide the spoils with France, right? And if you'd just been looking at the politics of it, you'd think, well, actually... putting a Jewish state there might complicate all our plans, right? Well, the same people attacking me for that say, "Oh, Nigel, brilliant, distancing himself from Tommy Robinson. He might, whatever he feels about it, the politics don't permit him." Trump doesn't do that. Trump changes people's minds, right? I'm so impressed. I'm gone a bit... sour now because I've had to talk about Nigel, but I'm actually in a good mood because of the brilliant way Trump has just moved the meter on any number of issues with this blizzard of executive orders. And I love the way, you know, even Nigel's a pretty funny guy and he can do well with, you know, some of his photo ops and all the rest of it. But even there, Trump is actually, Biden said Trump voters were garbage. So he then does a photo op in a garbage truck. Kamala pretends she's worked at McDonald's. So then he actually goes to McDonald's. So these photo ops are in the service of things that are made. That was a brilliant the thing, making the point that Kamala is elite. She's all for the pronoun crowd and all the rest of it. That was a brilliant. These were brilliant ways of doing it. This has been the most fantastic 10 days of any new administration. He's done more, Trump. You know, I look at Conservative Inc. and telling us, "Oh, you know, you're not a real conservative if you support tariffs." Well, I don't know whether you're a real conservative, but if you shove it up the president of whatever banana republic it was for not taking back his citizens, if you weaponize tariffs like this, you know, the trouble is we don't live in abstract worlds. We live in a Western world that, regardless of where you live in it, is going off the cliff. So what matters is not people who demand ideological purity, like the Conservative Inc. Never Trumpers. I mean, if you want a good laugh, have a look at David French's Twitter feed or whatever. They've all made a nice living out of Conservative. Nobody would have ever heard of all these people but for Conservative Inc., which enables them to live these nice lives disconnected from the entirety of the American people. So you have these people demanding ideological purity on the one hand, or like the Nigel guy saying, oh, well, he's got to put his finger in the wind, and if it goes a millimetre too far to the east or a millimetre too far to the west, he's screwed. So this is why Nigel can't afford to take a principled position on anything. Really? Really? Do you think Trump is brilliant at just saying what he thinks and then basically figuring out a way to implement what he thinks? The contrast. And I'm not even, Nigel has got a couple of good polls, right? Giorgia Meloni is prime minister and she's talking. Where does Nigel stand on the World Health Organization? Chris Davis says, Mark, I can't recall. Is Chris one of those with Nigel to the end guys? I can't recall now. Chris Davis says, Mark, I've gotten so excited my brain has fallen out. Mark, I hope you're well. Over 10,000 millionaires have left the UK since the general election. The top 1% of taxpayers contribute 30% of total taxation. The net result is that those who remain will pay more tax. The UK is already paying the highest marginal rates of taxation for over 70 years. Yeah, we used to do this on the Mark Steyn show. And then Nigel took advantage of my time in the ICU. Is it conceivable, says Chris Davis, that Rachel from Accounts... That's the nickname they have for the Chancellor of the Exchequer. And people are saying, oh, it's sexist, so you shouldn't call her Rachel from Accounts. Is pursuing deliberate sabotage of the UK economy, or is she really that stupid not to know better? No, I don't think this isn't a time really to put it down to stupidity on any front. I'm sure they're aware of these departures, you know, which is 10,000 millionaires in 6 months is quite a lot to lose. But there's no reason for anybody to stay and pay the rates of income tax that are going to be necessary to fund this. And it's not as if you're in a free country. There was a guy from the Lotus Eaters, who was returning to the United Kingdom. He's a citizen of the United Kingdom, and he landed at Heathrow or wherever it was. I think he'd been in America, shooting some stuff about the inauguration, right? And he lands at Heathrow, and he's dragged in for questioning under the terrorism laws, right? The terrorism laws in the UK are basically applied against the people. So, because if you are a terrorist, you can operate, like they'll let you, if you are an actual terrorist, the terrorism laws have no interest in whether you're acquiring enough ricin to kill 12,000 people or you've ordered the Al-Qaeda handbook. They're not interested in any of that. So if you are an actual terrorist, it's a great country to live in. But if you're not, and you just land like the, not podcast eaters. They should, that's not a bad name for a show. The Lotus Eaters, they, you land back from filming the inauguration. They detain you for hours under anti-terror legislation and they confiscate your devices. So in other words, the laptop or whatever on which you've filmed all your exclusive interviews and the rest, they're never going to get that back. They never get that back. This is where people were wrong about Keir Starmer. I think I said this last week, saying he was just bland or boring. He's not. He has not a single bone in his body that would come down on the side of freedom. So when you say that this is the deliberate sabotage of the UK economy, I don't know whether he even thinks in terms of the economy, because he's happy to freeze pensioners to death and all the rest of it. But so what he thinks of, he's actually, as Obama would say, engaged in fundamental transformation. As I said, there isn't a bone in Keir Starmer's body that comes down on the side of liberty. So, for example, if you call him two-tier Keir and imply that he is a two-tier, he's running a two-tier justice system where the constabulary is too busy policing your tweets to put any gang rapists up in before the court, before the judge. So even making that point that he's running a two-tier justice system, which is true, they're now going to the Home Office, paper is planning on making that a de facto sign that you are extreme right wing. Okay, so if you call him two-tier Keir in a, don't do this, Chris, I'm just being hypothetical. Don't call him two-tier Keir in a tweet, because that itself will be proof that you are a far right extremist. Britain is turning into a profoundly ugly country. And I think that that's also a consequence of all this 1,000 Albanian sex traffickers a night. Obviously, if you change the people, you change the nature of a society. And that's, again, where Nigel is, compared to Trump, Nigel has failed to move the needle. You look at all the things that Trump has said about them, the Haitians in Ohio or wherever it was, eating your dogs and cats. People say, oh, there's no evidence for this and all this. Well, actually there is. There's quite a lot of there's certainly evidence that the Haitians are eating animals from that they have found in parks in that Ohio town. But the point is, people got that. They said, yeah, people, you know, you've got to move the meter. You got to move. You can't just be sticking your finger in the wind and snaffling up I was in the Carlton Club a couple of months before I had my heart attacks. And there was a very famous Briton in the bar of the Carlton Club. And there weren't many other people in there, so we started. I wouldn't say it was a friend or anything, but we just started chit-chatting because it was a quiet time of the day. And he said, oh, Nigel's just showbiz now. And I think of that line often. It seemed an odd thing for him to say because he supported all Nigel's politics. You know, there's a lot of people in Reform that I would support. If I happened to live there, I would vote Reform in the next election. But I don't expect Nigel to deliver on anything. And that's the thing, if you compare him with, you know, Elon Musk's tweet is quite right. That this is, he's not the man for the job. I'm getting all distracted now. Elisa Angel says, why do the US journalists think it is their job to debate the people they're questioning? Why can't they ask direct, concise questions taught in Journalism 101? Who, what, when, where, why? Well, because that'd be a bit boring. I mean, I will say this as a person who used to be on television, that you want to have an interesting back and forth. The problem is that all these things, CNN is, no one should bother with CNN. The audience is tiny. No one should bother with a lot of these shows. But when someone is not a good faith interviewer, I think it's very difficult to argue that you got to waste your time on them. And when they frame the issue all the time, you know, I love to see people swatting this down. Oh, the jobs Americans won't do. Well, that's so you're looking at importing cheap indentured slave labor because you're not willing to pay a market rate for the guy who cleans your pool boy at your big fancy mansion before it got burned down. I mean, these people, everything is framed from that dishonestly. From that point of view. And these pathetic people, I mean, J.D. Vance just does it, you know, because other guys get up in the morning and jog or they go to the gym where he gets all the workout he needs just going on CBS or ABC and laying it down to whatever nitwit interviewer they put up before him. And that's worth doing if he's going to do it all like that. Again, it's an example of how the 47th presidency so far is an awful lot better than the 45th. John Wilson says, Jake Tapper seemed really annoyed Stephen Miller wanted to answer his question rather than just rolling over and agreeing with Jake's false premise. I know, I love this. This is the other thing where they, jobs Americans won't do. Can you answer? Yeah, I've got, I can give you an answer if you've got 30 minutes. Oh, we don't have that much time. Oh, really? Why did you ask me on then? So you take up all the time with your stupid lefty-framed, cliche-riddled questions. Oh, the one to Marco Rubio. Oh, there are 11 million. No, there were supposedly 11 million when I first began writing about this issue 25 years ago, and it seemed an underestimate then. I would wager, what's the population of Canada now? 40 million, give or take. I would imagine there's more than the population of Canada living as undocumented Americans, as Harry Reid seemed to call them. So you shouldn't do that. That's the best thing you can do. It's what Pierre Poilievre does in Canada. Don't accept the premise of these questions. You know, why play by the left's rules all the time? That's like these stupid debates. You know, oh, we don't have time for any questions about immigration, but here's our seventh question on climate change. Why play along with it? Why play along with it? Okay, I'm getting too heated, so I'm going to take a slight pause. But the good news is that this is the highlight of the show because you know who's here? Mark Stein. And we all love it when Mark Stein actually decides to show up. And he's here to tell you all about our weekend music show. This is Mark Stein. On the town this week, songs across a century, songs around the world, plus half a century of Frank favourites on a Sinatra sextet for the ages. And do you feel the only problem with Eurovision is not enough songs in Luxembourgish? On the town, Saturday at 5 on Serenade Radio. And 5 p.m. London time is 6 p.m. in Western Europe or 12 midday North American Eastern. So I hope you'll want to check that out. Mark Stein live around the planet. It is 13 to 4 Eastern time, which is 13 to 9 Greenwich Mean Time. A little behind, a lot ahead, according to where you chance to be on this turbulent earth. Sorry, I was getting all worked up there. I don't really like being reminded about what some of these horrible little creeps at GB News were doing while I was in that ICU in France. You know, we were making a difference. Vaccine victims who came on the show, I think 4 of the first 5 to receive compensation had appeared on the show. They were, because we were covering that, they had to actually start agreeing to some of the compensation. And again, we got some so-called grooming gang inquiry. That's why I love this. Oh, we're going to have an inquiry. Some of the inquiries that had gone nowhere were reopened because we began talking about it on the Mark Steyn Show. So it's about, you know, at a certain point, nobody wants to waste their life. You want to do something where you make a difference. And at some point, you've got to actually do things because they're the right thing to do. It would be easy to say that. Farage could easily say, look, I don't like Tommy Robinson. He's not my cup of tea at all. But to be in, get 18 months of solitary for a civil contempt crime, I think is wrong. And then, and if they get away with it, the next time it won't be Tommy Robinson. It might be someone who's a member of my club. And because these things have a habit. That was the way it was. It's the way it is with everything in this bloody awful fag-end Western civilization we're condemned to live in. I learned it the hard way in Canada when, you know, people, they would say, oh, well, you know, these human rights commissions only go after these pathetic, you know, neo-Nazis living in their mum's basement. And, of course, what happened? Oh, so they're just mopping up the last seven neo-Nazis in Canada. No, it moves inward. It starts with the neo-Nazi living in his mum's basement, and then it moves in. And Nigel should be... If Nigel can't explain that as a point of principle, then he shouldn't be in politics. Who's he going to persuade on anything? It was actually the same thing, if you recall... With the J6ers, they tossed the J6ers in jail, and people think, oh, well, you know, he's just some rioter. He's just like some fringe rioter. And the next thing you know, they're going after people who've actually served in the Trump White House, and they're treating Peter Navarro and Steve Bannon like any old J6er. And then they start trying and convicting and threatening to jail Trump as if he's just the J6er. So you should always do it. You may not like Tommy Robinson, Nigel, just like... In the end, it turned out you didn't like me, and you didn't like Lawrence Fox, and you didn't like Calvin Robinson, and you didn't like all the rest of them. It turns out you didn't like Liam Halligan. There's all kinds of people. You know, he never does anything. He never really lifts a finger for anybody. But the thing about it is, you should be able to say, look, if we let the British state get away with jailing people on civil contempt charges, because this is what happens when the Director of Public Prosecutions becomes Prime Minister. He chooses who to make an example of. That's what Starmer's doing. If we let people go 18 months in, banged up for 18 months in solitary for a civil contempt charge, do you think they're going to stop with just one? Eventually it might be you, Nigel. Huh? They might find some reason to stick you in HMP Belmarsh. Right? And then you'll be having to dodge Butch in the showers every day. No, it shouldn't really be. Don't ask me any more questions about Nigel Farage. It's done and dusted, as I think they say in the UK. And even if they don't, I've just said it. Robert Fox. I think of my lovely Provençal nurses. Vanessa, who is the head nurse in the ICU, and she was very resistant. She'd always take the laptop away and move it out of reach, put it on the other side of the room, because she could actually see this stuff was stressing me out. I'm lucky to be alive. Billy Kilpin says, dear Mark, Senator Murkowski of Alaska said recently that she strongly disagrees with the renaming of Denali to Mount Stein. It's not Mount Stein. They've moved it back to Mount McKinley. How big of an issue could this be going forward? Will Trump lose her vote as George W. Bush lost the Jim Jeffords vote over a Vermont milk subsidy? Keep up the good work. Well, they shouldn't have changed the name from Mount McKinley. The guy... Alaska is part of the sovereign territory of the United States, and McKinley was the president of the United States, and he has a mountain named after him because he took a bullet for his country. So that name should never have been changed. And again, that's just such a third world kind of thing. Again, that's a banana republic kind of thing. It's like when Chrétien wanted to rename Mount Logan for Pierre Trudeau. He wanted to call it Mount Trudeau, which a surprising number of women did, oddly enough. This not Justin, of course, but this is his dad. But at any rate, Mount McKinley. So I agree with that. When you say jumping Jim Jeffords, I was at whatever crap. What was it? Was it a Radisson or something? Some crappy chain hotel in Burlington, Vermont, when Jim Jeffords announced that he was jumping to caucus with the Democrats. That wasn't actually over a Vermont milk subsidy. It was over not being invited to the Vermont Teacher of the Year reception. He changed control of the United States Senate because some wanker in the Bush administration failed to invite him to a reception at the White House for the Vermont Teacher of the Year. Well, this is on such things do great nations rise and fall. And so he became a door. He wasn't really a Republican, and certainly he'd lost almost all his marbles. He was doing Joe Biden impressions long before Joe Biden started doing Joe Biden impressions. And so they decided, so jumping Jim Jeffords decided to jump to the Democrats over that. And it's the strange thing is, whatever one feels about that, you know, you begin to wonder, well, why did the war on terror go nowhere? Well, because this is an administration that forgot to invite the senator from Vermont to the Vermont Teacher of the Year reception. Very, in some small way, it's telling. Now, if she wants to do this, the difference is that to get elected as a Republican in Vermont in the 1990s and 2000s is difficult. They don't really want anybody, you know, they're not going to vote for Ted Cruz in Vermont. You maybe don't need to be. And it's actually since Jim Jeffords stepped down, there'd been no Republicans elected statewide in Vermont. So you're up against people there who don't really want a Republican. They like a Republican they like a Democrat in Republican dress, and Jim Jeffords did that quite well. I remember all the crappy liberal progressive bookstores. I think they've all gone out of business now, but back then I remember going into Bear Pond Books. Does that still exist in Montpelier, the capital of Vermont? Just after jumping, Jim Jeffords had jumped, and they had one bookmark. If you bought a book, they gave you a complimentary bookmark, and the only bookmark they had was one with bloody Jim Jeffords on it saying thank you Jim. Right, that's Vermont. I didn't want it. I gave it back because I said I was one of the rare right-wing knuckle draggers who knew how to read. Senator Murkowski is not in Vermont. She's in Alaska. And it ought to be possible so let's primary her. Let's just primary her and get rid of her. It's a different thing for Susan Collins in Maine But in Alaska, you can certainly get someone to, and particularly if it's over, and actually if McConnell, even though he's stepping down, should be primary. And let's have a primary, or let's have a recall, or whatever you do to it, because what he did the other day, I'm tired of it. The president was elected on an agenda. And the idea now, and all these people, so McConnell votes for the Bad Tranny of the Decade award winner, wasn't Vermont Teacher of the Year, it was Bad Tranny of the Decade, whatever her name was, the highly decorated four-star admiral. Is Thoroughly Modern Millie a tranny, or does he just have that effect? I can't tell. Anyway... you got to be careful what you say about trannies. There's some sort of I keep meaning to write about this, but they've got this sort of killer tranny gang that shot the border patrol guy in Vermont. So I ought to be careful in New Hampshire going to war against unconvincing trannies. It might not work out too well for me. But no, these people, McConnell votes for unconvincing trannies. He doesn't have any problem with that, but he won't vote for the president's nominees. Tipped his hand yet on RFK Jr.? Oh, here we have a question on RFK. Dan Phillips says, read the RFK Jr. hearings. The Democrat senators only reveal they are absolutely hate-filled and have only to offer the lies that they've engaged in the last 4 years. Yeah, you have to be... these lies, as you put it, haven't worked for the Democrats. And I think they're getting a bit desperate now. I don't know how it will go with, you know, RFK. A lot of these people, like the guy who was roaring at RFK today, he's basically on the take from Big Pharma, that senator. They've all had an awful lot of money from these guys. The thing is, this is like immigration. I said as much, actually, if you haven't seen my interview with Laura Perrins, I think that's one of the last things I talked about. That if you were to look at if you were to go to the average American grade school and just look at who's in the schoolyard, you would never bet the future on America, because these people have debased America's human capital. The thing is, that's all any society is. It's the people who are there, right? It's the people. So sometimes you do what Britain's done, where you decide we need to move in just a couple of years. 10% of Albania's male population has moved to the United Kingdom. So the United Kingdom is going to be something other unless Nigel Pansy Farage butches up and comes out in support of remigration. Sorry, Nigel, you're going to have to do it. Because on these numbers, as he's conceded, we can't afford to fall out with Islam. No, you can't, because they're going to be your voters. If you ever make it to 10 Downing Street. So there's got to be remigration. When you change the people, when you do what Biden has done and let in twice the population of Norway into the United, there's no way you can assimilate that number. Even if they wanted to assimilate, even if they were actually Norwegians as opposed to Somalis and Haitians, there's no way you can assimilate on that kind of scale. They don't need to assimilate when there's millions and millions and millions. So the point is that's one way you can change a society. The other is to just make all your kids incredibly unhealthy. I must have mentioned this before, but I always used to go to the county, my local county fair. And I noticed at one point that, and then I sort of did a bit more considered it a bit more statistically, but the evidence was there before my eyes that people who had become grossly obese and unhealthy and wheezing a couple of years after they left high school were now becoming grossly obese and wheezing in middle school. You know, in other words, the age at which these chronic diseases afflict American children starts earlier and earlier, and that's an absolute tragedy. And this is before we get into all the other the mental drugs and all the rest of it. So I absolutely fully support RFK's thing, make America healthy again. I don't like this declining life expectancy. This is as critical, because they're part of the same problem. As I said, they're about changing your society. You can't, no point of having ambitious recruitment levels for your armed forces when an increasingly large percentage of the human capital eligible for your armed forces are too unhealthy to qualify. So you have to keep lowering standards. There is a Dan, this was from Dan Phillips in Telford, Tennessee. There was zero integrity demonstrated by the Democrats. None are interested in an honest answer, only grandstanding and soundbites to obscure their own deceit and corruption. These are truly evil people, and they have the audacity to call this a deliberative body. It is a chamber of horrors. And then Dan says, thoughts. Well, I can tell you exactly when I began loathing the United States Senate, when I saw it in action during the Clinton impeachment trial. It isn't the world's greatest deliberative body. Do you think any of those guys, maybe one or two of the slicker fellows, that Senator Kennedy or Ted Cruz or whatever, but you don't, it's not as if they have any, it's a very, you know, it's only when they do these stupid hearings, you know, and then they do the whole thing, I'll have 4 minutes to ask questions, and then I yield the balance of my time to the senator from whatever, you know. But if you actually had them just having back and forth across the Senate chamber, it's just such a repulsive place. I've written about this, but I remember when I was there for the whole of that bloody impeachment trial, watching Ted Kennedy, he has his feet on a footstool. He's sitting there, and then he motions to the page because he wants the page to adjust the footstool. So the page comes, kneels down at Ted Kennedy's feet in the front of the desk, and adjusts the footstool by 3 inches and goes away again. Then Ted calls him back again because, no, he's gone about half an inch too far. Could he just move it half an inch back? These are repulsive people. Absolutely, absolutely. And this idea that it deliberates, what does it deliberate on? These bills are passed unread by either chamber. You know, so some people have been very, very strong in the, you know, where that winning soundbite of Pete Hegseth, where he said, you know, if you're a rifleman and you lose your rifle, you're in big trouble, right? But if you're a highly decorated 4-star general, if you're a highly decorated 4-star general and you lose a war, you pay no price at all. You fight goat herds with fertilizer for 20 bloody years, and you're still mad, and you can't just fade away so that nobody, you know, notices that it's ignominious. You have to actually make it blazingly, flagrantly ignominious by the Taliban taking over, the same guys you kicked out in 2001, taking over all over again, but with more territory, before you've had time to leave. And you drone the seven most photogenic moppets in Kabul on your way out because you have crackerjack intelligence has identified, you know, the cute three-year-old girl as a terrorist. I mean, it's just... And yet thoroughly modern Milley was being hailed as a great patriot. He's being hailed as a great patriot because he tells the Chinese, don't worry. If Trump tells me to send the Air Force, I'm going to give you a heads up, so you needn't worry about it. It's just. And again, to emphasize the point I made on that Mark Stein show, diversity is not your strength. And we don't even need to go to any crazy college town or listen to some whack job NPR show. Look at the Butch boys in the military. Diversity is our strength. Well, the Taliban are the least diverse army on the planet. They're extremely smelly men with big beards. And they kicked your butt. Right. And they're now the eighth or ninth biggest military on the planet. Because you couldn't even take away all your toys when you scuttled out of town. You know, Pete Hegseth, Pete and I used to talk about this in, you know, in the green room in the corridors on the air. They don't really do that. They don't like that. They don't like any questioning of the military on Fox. So they do all this thank you for your service thing. Well, thank you for your service is the first part of the sentence, because it goes on, thank you for your service in a thankless, unwon war that the Pentagon was unserious about prosecuting. You know, until this particular war-making model came along, it was always generally understood, you know, the lions led by donkeys, which was Alan Clark's line, I think, about the First World War. But before that, it was generally accepted that it was more important, you know, if you had a great commander, you could... make do with relatively second-rate men. That was a sort of basic understanding of war as it was fought, up until Crimea and all the rest of it. But you couldn't. So you could have a great commander with third-rate, you could have a first-rate commander with second-rate men. But you can't have first-rate men with fifth-rate commanders, which is what people like thoroughly modern Milley are. I would love it if it was like the French thing, and he was standing in a courtyard, and they pulled his epaulets off like they do in France. That's what they should do with all his ribbons from shoulder to scrotum. That's what they should do. They should tear them off him and then give him a blindfold and a cigarette. Absolutely extraordinary. And making him, this is again what I, the idea of, you know, the left now is not in favor of civilian control of the military. Oh, interesting. Good to know. Useful to know. Useful to know. John Fry says, I especially liked Hegseth's statement that the last time the US won a war, there were four-star generals, and now there are 10 times as many. Serious case of bloated bureaucracy. Maybe the new secretary won't need DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, to slash the fat in the military. This is, quite, it's interesting that they're thinking of taking off one of his pips, what's he called, thoroughly modern Milley, because, you know, you're quite right to make this point. It's a bureaucracy. It's a bureaucracy that accounts for 40% of the planet's military spending. But it's like Kathy Schadl, after getting roughed up by the Toronto coppers, used to say that the police are bureaucrats with guns. And that is that. I mean, again, Pete Hegseth is a patriot. But actually, even if he wasn't a patriot, If he was just a warrior who was sick of these guys nancying around, running around the Hindu Kush for 20 bloody years and being made fools of by goat herds with fertilizer. The American way of war does not work. He's serious about that. I mean, even taking down the portraits of these guys, because the whole thing, I was on the Joint Chiefs of Staff, a highly decorated 4-star general. Is there any other kind? Highly decorated 4-star general. Is there any non-highly decorated? Oh, they all get highly decorated, do they? It's just one of those things. These guys, there shouldn't be portraits of thoroughly modern Milley. These guys lose everything they touch. It's extraordinary. You know, Iraq was liberated by American blood and treasure. And some of us thought after Vietnam and the long shadows of Vietnam and all the other bollocks, that after having 3,000 people die on one day, that you wouldn't go to war unless you were going to be serious about winning that war. But no, it's just like all the other wars, just dorising about for a couple of decades until all the lobbyists made enough money, you know. And okay, they get gotten a bit more subtle about it now, so that now they're doing it at one remove. So there's they've slaughtered a generation of Ukrainian men, but they're still all the weaponry that Joe Biden is giving Ukraine is going to have to be replaced at the American end. So they're all doing very nicely. So yeah, I became a highly decorated 4-star general, and then I became a highly remunerated defense lobbyist. Awful. Pete's serious, and I don't think he would have done this were he not serious about this. Monsieur Stein, says Olga from Arizona, with all the pardonings and cancellations of various litigations going on, do you suppose your own case might be impacted? The chances of man ponying up any actual money is slim, but it would sure be good to see him neutered. Happy Tet to the Vietnamese contingent of the club. Olga, he supposedly, he lost this motion about National Review's legal expenses, which is a couple of weeks ago now. And that's over $500,000. And he was ordered then by the judge to pay that $500,000 by within 30 days, of which at least half has gone. So I assume, because he hasn't spent a penny on anything. When I had some back and forth on him, he got a bit angry about that and said, well, he'd had to pay for hotels he stayed at. Boy, I'd love it if that was the tab I had to pick up. Anyway, he's presumably going to find some big shot, his bro, that he has his bromance with, Leonardo DiCaprio. $500,000 isn't a lot to Leonardo DiCaprio, so maybe Leonardo DiCaprio will be paying, paying National Review on behalf of Michael Mann. We started with Nigel Gatekeeper Farage and ended with Michael Mann. This show's been a disaster from start to finish. I don't know, but that looks like it's all we've got time for. I'm surprised I made it this long. This has been Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A. That's going to do it for today. I'll be back in a couple of hours with our current tale for our time, which is Robert Hugh Benson's very prescient novel, Lord of the World. In which, as many listeners have pointed out, he predicted Obama, because basically there's this young American senator nobody knows anything about who becomes the new Messiah. Anyway, that'll be back in a couple of hours. Stick with Stein Online for our regular Thursday date with Laura's Links, Laura Rosen-Cohen, rounding up the internet as only she can. If you're still toying with the pros and cons of the Mark Stein Club, where we would love to have you. And don't forget our cruise sailing from Portugal in April with our favourite Samanthas on board, Sammy Woodhouse and Samantha Smith. And I'm so looking forward to being on the Briny with those two favourite Samanthas of mine. Stay safe, stay free, stay well.
Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. Rights reserved.